Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What is happening, gang? Football is upon us, and we are wrapping up our look at the Hall of Fame class of this year and finally taking a look at who might make it next year. And in this week's episode, we make the case for Reggie Wayne. This, to me, in doing the statistical regression this week, is one of the great no-brainers in the history of football. This guy needs to be in the Hall of Fame. It doesn't make any sense. And Bill is going to very eloquently, point by point, make the case about why Reggie needs to be in the Hall of Fame. This is also a fun episode because we get to look at the 2001 draft, which was a really unique draft in the NFL. A lot of receivers going early. Bill Snagin, arguably the best one, at the 30th pick in the draft, sixth receiver taken. Steve Smith would get drafted later. But this truly is a fun draft. But before we jump into today's episode, I want to take a minute and talk about one of our favorite sponsors on the pod, BetOnline. It's that time of year again, and all eyes are now turning to football as teams are getting back on the gridiron to start the football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all of your college and pro football action this season. Get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega event and the world's largest $200,000 NFL Survivor contest now open at BetOnline. So what are you waiting for? Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 100% welcome bonus. Take advantage of their opening day super promo equals make the bet on Thursday, September 9th for the season opener between the Super Bowl champion Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. And if you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up using the promo code NFL100. That's up to $25 using the promo code NFL100. What are you waiting for? BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports actions. Head over to BetOnline today and get going. All right, guys, this is our final look at the Hall of Fame this year. This is making the case for Reggie Wayne. All right, here we go. We are live on the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian. The season is upon us. College football is here this weekend. It's actually brisk in the nation's capital. How much better can life get? How are we doing today, guys?
Good, thank you.
We're doing well, and I'm hoping it continues to get better, Scott.
Well, there you have it. All right. Well, we continue and end our Hall of Fame episodes with our final Making the Case episode. And this one focuses on one of the greatest wide receivers to ever play in the NFL, Reginald Wayne, born November 17th, 1978. We got a birthday coming up. He's the former American football wide receiver. He spent 14 seasons with the Indianapolis Colts. He played college football at the U and was drafted by the Colts in the first round, 30th overall in the 2001 NFL draft. A six-time Pro Bowl selection, Wayne was a member of the Colts Super Bowl championship team that beat the Chicago Bears. He ranks 10th all-time in NFL career receptions, 10th all-time in NFL receiving yards, 24th all-time in career touchdowns. And on December 14th, 2014, Wayne played in both his 209th game of his career and his 142nd win as a member of the Colts, breaking franchise records set by Peyton Manning. The stat line is unbelievably compelling. Over 14,000 receiving yards, over 1,000 receptions, over 80 touchdowns at 82. And I think a largely underrated postseason career as a receiver. So I don't know if you've heard, but apparently former NBA player Lamar Odom may be returning to professional basketball in Spain soon. He's been taking a new product he owes the credit to. It's called Balance 7. Balance 7 is a pH balancing alkaline supplement drink. It is truly awesome. If you're looking to kind of get the edge on your competition in every way possible, Balance 7 is a tool you should definitely look at. Whether you're looking to try to balance out your pH levels, whether you're trying to get a little more energy, Balance 7 has you covered. I mean, I think we all saw it as how good Lamar Odom looked in his celebrity boxing match against Aaron Carter. So what are you waiting for? Head over to balance7.com and use the code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for free shipping. Balance7.com and use the code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for free shipping. I did it, and if it worked for him, it can work for you too. Bill, before we get into Reggie, I think whenever we do these Making the Case episodes, we kind of have to set the framework. What in your mindset statistically is that minimum criteria for a Hall of Fame receiver?
Well, with receivers, it's going to be a little bit of a moving target. But let me take you to what I think the landscape looks like today. In years to come, it's going to expand pretty dramatically because of the expansion of the play of the passing game. So, and 17 games is, of course, going to skew everything.
Right.
So, you know, they're going to be a different stat milieu in years to come. But, you know, that's the way it works. That's true of past generations as well. But right now, in terms of receiving yards, the magic number is really 14,000. So you have Jerry Rice, Larry Fitzgerald, Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, Isaac Bruce, Tony Gonzalez, Tim Brown, Steve Smith, who I think will be eligible this coming year.
He is.
And Reggie Wayne are the top 10 in receiving yards. And the difference between Reggie and Steve Smith between Reggie and Steve Smith is about 300 yards. And the difference between Reggie and Marvin Harrison is 150 yards. So 14,000 is the magic number. Now below 14, Andre Johnson, I don't think he's eligible this year, but soon, is at 14,185. James Lawson, who's in the Hall, is at 14,004. Chris Carter, who's in at 13,899, but he was kind of a controversial selection. Anquan Boldin, Henry Ellard, and Torrey Holt are all 13,779, 13,77, 13,382. Andre Reed in a different era, completely different era, was 13,198. And Steve Largent and Jason Witten, who will be, I'm sure, first ballot guy, were 13,89 and 13,046 respectively. So if you're 13,000 or above, you're in the conversation. If you're 14,000 or above, you're probably in. And then you combine that with average yards per catch and receptions, and that pretty much tells the tale. Below 13,000, Julio Jones, by the way, if he's healthy this year, will pass 13,000. Irving Fryer, Art Monk, Brandon Marshall, Jimmy Smith, Charlie Joyner, Hines Ward, which will be controversial at 12,083. He's a nominee. Derek Mason, Michael Irvin, who's a special case. He's like Andre. He was in another era.
Right.
Don Maynard in the era when he was a leading receiver of all time. Calvin Johnson, which was controversial despite the fact that he got in on the first ballot. It's a very short career. His APC and touchdowns were way up there. So that's that plus his spectacular play in the minds of the voters got him in. Interestingly enough, Calvin's at 11,619. Mohsin Mohammed, who no one would even think about as a Hall of Famer, right, even though I love him, is at 11,438. So that the Calvin Johnson one was a bit of an outlier. Keenan McCardell, Chad Johnson. In other words, no names below 13,000 yards at this point that anybody would really consider as a legitimate candidate.
Right. So to that end, Bill, how much does postseason performance impact how a wide receiver or any player for that matter is perceived from the standpoint of making the Hall? And I'm kind of thinking about the Julian Edelman case that might come up.
Well, with wide receivers, it's less important than it is other positions. In my experience, you take into consideration the and Holt and Reggie Wayne were finalists this year and neither made it. I think truthfully they canceled each other out unfairly, but that's for later on in the show. The issue with wide receivers is usually what they did over their careers. Witness, actually, I think Megatron was helped by the fact that his team was so lousy.
Yeah,
right.
You know, they're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers of the modern era, if you will. And so because they were so bad and he was so good, it sort of set him outside the milieu of what the Lions were, which was lousy, except for the 2 years Jim Caldwell was at the helm. And Megatron was gone by then. I think he was gone by then. So that was, again, an anomaly in a lot of ways. But the playoff picture for other positions, you know, particularly quarterbacks and obviously coaches, is critical, and especially Super Bowls, you know.
But Bill, most other positions, I mean, how much can any one guy guarantee that his team is even going to ever get to a Super Bowl? I mean, is that fair? I mean, if take Megatron or others who were just on lousy teams, but they were wonderful, wonderful players.
Well, it's not fair, but it is what it is. Rick Goslin wrote not too long ago in an article that I like Rick a lot. We just disagree a lot. But he was trying to prove that Robert Mathis, who's eligible this year, was a better player than Dwight Freeney. That's not necessarily true.
Yeah,
you're asking me to choose between sons, so that's harder to do. But the fact of the matter is, it's not necessarily true. And his point during it, he said, you know, there's no point in talking about people unless they're head and shoulders above everybody else who doesn't have a ring. And that's the way a lot of the writers think. That's the validation. If you don't have a ring, you're suspect.
Right.
And by the way, if you don't have a winning ring, you're suspect. So, for example, Marty Schottenheimer, and when you rank coaches all time, Marty Schottenheimer is so far ahead of Dick Vermeil in all-time record, it's not even close. But Marty doesn't get a look because his teams did not do well in the playoffs, and they never made a Super Bowl.
I mean, to that point, that could be the case for why a Hines Ward, or if an Edelman gets into the conversation, that maybe they get pushed above players that have better statistical careers, you think?
Well, Edelman is going to get credit for the Patriots. And in truth, he should, because they won so often, and they won without, when he was there, they won without Spygate. So there's no taint of Spygate which, by the way, was real and important and had a major impact. competitively. There's no taint of that. It's after that. So the fact that he performed so well for the amount of time that he played and did so well in the playoffs is going to count for him. And I probably wouldn't argue against it.
It does the interaction with the press and the reputation of the guy, and if he's perceived as, you know, a sort of a bust-ass guy the way Jules was, and good with the press and affable, does that play into it too?
I think it helps, but I was shocked, you know, when Philadelphia's guy got in, because he was not only, you know, I guess he was a good story, but he was disruptive. I mean, there's no two ways about that, and proved that. Terrell Owens had proved it in his, you know, in how he accepted his induction, his election. So I would have thought, if you asked most football people, and Andy Reid went to bat for him, which I think was tremendous on Andy's part. And you know, Andy's a wonderful person. But if you ask most football people, they would have said no. Not A.J. Smith, the former general manager of both the Chargers and the Washington football team when they were the Redskins, famously said, I thought you had to help your team to get in the Hall of Fame.
It's a good line.
Pretty good. Pretty good. All right.
But he got in. The point is he got in.
Yeah.
Now, maybe because he was a good story. I don't know. It certainly helps if you have good relations with the,
yeah. Maybe they were thinking it would be ratings for the broadcast until he decided to do it from home and then not show up.
I don't know.
All right. Well, talking about making your team better, as from a draft geek perspective, I love the 2001 draft. It's a fun draft, a lot of different players. Just to set the stage, in 2000, you guys finished second in the division, lost your first round of the playoffs. So before we get into Reggie, headed into that 2001 draft, what were the dynamics going into the draft? Did you think you would move down? And how did the trade with the Giants come together?
No, we did not think we would move down. We were focused on a corner. We felt we needed a number one corner, if you will. Don't forget, we weren't playing Tampa 2 at the time. We weren't playing Dungy defense. We were playing, what Vic Fangio plays now, essentially matchup zone blitz defense. And we needed a quality corner. Now, Vic did not like rookie corners, generally speaking. He wanted veterans. But, you know, he was willing to take a look at what was there. But we couldn't get any consensus. The scouts liked one player, which Vic didn't like at all. He liked another player, which none of the scouts liked.
Right.
And we were in a situation where, you know, if you don't have consensus or anything or something close to consensus, if you can't forge it, and there's no overwhelming reason to make a pick that the coaches don't want. Sometimes you have to do it for the good of the franchise, but you shouldn't unless there's an overwhelming reason to do it. So I wasn't going to step in and bang the table and say, we have to take this guy. We couldn't find consensus. So 2 days before the draft, I mean, we had a really, really tough meeting. It was knockdown, dragout. And everybody left the room mad, which will happen.
Yeah. Even you?
Not terribly. I was in my run the room mode. So I was mad that we couldn't reach consensus, but not mad at anybody for being, stating their case. So the next day, Coach Mora came in and said, that was a lousy meeting. That's my fault. If you want to take the corner, go ahead and take it. And I said, no, we're not going to take him. Let's look and see if we can trade down. So, and we talked about it, and it was a really civil conversation, you know, a nice conversation. I said, no, if the coaching staff doesn't feel, and especially Vic doesn't feel that the guy fills the bill, then I'm fine with that. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to force a pick that it starts off on the wrong foot to begin with. And isn't, and we would be wrong to do it. We'd be hurt the kid. So let's see if there's somebody else we can like, and if not, and probably, very probably, we'll try and trade down. So the we knew the Giants were in the market for a corner, and so I called Ernie Accorsi and said, you know, if you're interested in coming up, we would be interested in going down. There's no, I made it clear to him. I said, there's no corner we like there. So, you know, the coast is kind of clear for you if that's what you want. So he said, okay, let me get back to you. So, I told Dom and Ely and Coach Mora and Chris and Tommy Telesco, you know, the people that were involved in the decision making, we got a chance to go down. So let's go look at who's on the board. So we did. And the next guy we liked was Reggie Wayne. And we liked him a lot. Santana Moss was the biggest name at the U that year. He was the guru's favorite. But we did not like him at all. And I think he was drafted ahead of Reggie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he was. He went 16 to the Jets.
Yeah.
And a player we don't speak of here in D.C. anymore went 15, Rod Gardner.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we weren't crazy about Santana because he was, you know, small. And we loved Reggie because he had great separation ability, great hands, great size, you know, really good toughness. And he ran 4.51, which for us was kind of,
yeah,
you know, so, but Dom and I both said, you know, we love the guy. He's got he separates and he catches and he's tough. What more do you want? You know, we got Marvin on the other side. So if we're drafting 30th or 31st, you know, take the best player who's there, and it's Reggie Wayne. So the trade didn't get made until we were on the clock, actually. It finally got made. And then I was finishing up the paperwork and explaining it to Mr. Irsay, and a couple of picks went boom, boom, boom. It went fast. And I was in an ante room outside the draft room because our listeners who listen regularly will remember Mr. Irsay often had guests in the draft room, so we didn't want to have those kinds of discussions in front of outsiders. So I was in an ante room, and Dom came in and said, we're on the clock. And I said, oh, okay, Reggie Wayne, right? Because, yeah, Reggie Wayne. Okay, put it in.
Okay, right, right.
So I went out and said to Jim Moore, are you okay with Reggie Wayne? He said, yeah, you guys like him. And so we put the pick in, and then of course the hue and cry went up from our friends in the media. Are they taking a receiver? They don't need a receiver. They already got Marvin Harrison. What is this about? Who is Reggie Wayne? Another guy from Miami. We don't know Reggie Wayne. Yeah, okay, good. So
right, because that's the criteria. Bill, our listeners love when you sort of really take them inside process. Just as a case in point, when you were discussing the corner, sort of either specifically or generically, when you get those kind of disagreements between, say, the scouts and the coaches, and everybody's looking, you know, they're all pros, all of whom you like, they're looking at the same film, they're seeing the same stats. What is it that, you know, some guys look at something and see it one way, and the others, is it from a scout versus coach? You know, how does that come about?
Well, generally, scouts look more at the measurables, not in their entirety, but more at the measurables than they do technique, assuming that technique can be coached. The coaches look more at technique and production but particularly technique, then they do the measurables. They assume that if they're talking about the guy, that he has the measurables. So that's where the divide kind of exists. And the coaches quite correctly look at the player and say, can he do what we want him to do? The scouts look at him and say, well, he's very functional in the college offense or defense. It's easier to, by the way, to scout offensive players than it is defensive players. But he does fine there. We'll assume that he'll do fine at our level. And in the case of corners in a complex system, which Vic is, not that there's anything wrong with it, as you know, he's had great defenses wherever he's been. They have to do a lot of thinking and a lot of adjusting. Their focus and their processing has to be fast. They have to almost be super quick twitch, but super quick twitch mentally, not so much as much mentally as physically. So that's what the coaches see. There's a frequent divide. I remember another linebacker, Ohio State linebacker, who had a nice career in the league, who the coaches loved, you know, big banger, tough guy, knocked people back. And by the way, the coaches, when they get to their hotel room on Saturday or they get home on Saturday and turn the game on, are seeing snippets of him during the regular season and listening to the noise, you know, that it comes in. It, whether you like it or not, it's in there. It's a psychological phenomenon. It gets lodged in your brain. And so they were all hepped up about it. And the scouts said, no, not fast enough. And we as a management team said, no, not fast enough. And at that time, we were playing Tampa too. And Tony agreed. He said, no, he's a good player for somebody else, but not for us. So that's the process.
The scouts, just from a natural human standpoint, when they feel like they've discovered a guy, do they sort of get emotionally wed to him a little bit and try and, you know, and feel they need to be his champion?
Some do. I try to get that out of them. I try to coach that out of them. And one of the first things that I would say to new scouts or the new scouting assistants when we brought them in, Kevin Rogers and John Shaw, who are now, you know, with the Colts and in executive positions, are two front examples of guys that came in as scouting assistants right out of college. You know, don't tell me I like this guy. Tell me I like this guy because. And the because is important because it's going to make you go away from whatever you feel emotionally and concentrate on that checklist of things we have on the scouting report.
Right.
So now if the guys fall in love, sure they do. Absolutely. They do. And everybody jokes about it. And I'm as guilty as anybody, you know, Bob Sanders.
I think we know them.
Right.
Oh, the Bob Sanders Polian actually worked out pretty well. Yeah.
And it's an everlasting love. It's not just a, yeah, it's not summer love. It's full go.
It's Robert Knight, everlasting love. You don't remember.
There is a lot of that. I've told this story before, but it's apropos here. When Tom Telesco, and when Dom retired, Dom Anelli retired and Tom Telesco replaced him, he was beginning the March meetings after the combine. And I said, what time are you going to start tomorrow? And he said, 8:00. And I said, okay, I'll pop in. I want to hear the first five or six guys. And so he said, okay. And then about 3 minutes later, he came back and said, listen, I don't know how to tell you this, but I'd rather you weren't in the meeting.
Right.
And I said, why? I was stunned. And he said, well, you know, the scouts know that you've seen a lot of guys. They know that you're out there. And they'll watch your body language. They'll watch your note-taking. If they think you like a guy, that, you know, it might skew some of their thinking. So right. I said, okay, I get it.
It's definitely affected some of us on the podcast.
you can lock me out.
All right. I do have to say one thing, though, and we're all big Tom Telesco fans, but I don't think anybody replaces Dom, Bill. He took the job, but he can't replace Dom.
Well, Dom was one of a kind. He was the Danny DeVito of football.
He was as good a
comedian as he was a
exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, hey, Bill, before we jump into Reggie, one more hypothetical about this draft. So you had six receivers taken in the first round, Reggie being the sixth. What would have happened? Would you have still gone receiver, you think, if Reggie had, say, gone where Freddie Mitchell went at 25 to the Eagles? Because later in that draft, you had, you know, guys like Ocho Cinco, you had, you know, Chris Chambers, and then obviously Steve Smith goes 74th in that draft. You think you still would have gone receiver?
No, we didn't have any interest in Ocho Cinco, nor the other guy. And Smith was too far down the pecking order for us to even give consideration at that point. We didn't need a receiver. It's just that Reggie was the best player. You know, we always say, take the best player. Let the board talk to you. That's an Anealyism. That's number one. Let the board talk to you on draft day.
Right.
And so the board talked to us and said, Reggie Wayne, that's the right pick. And, you know, had he not been available, we would have taken whoever was the next best pick.
Right. All right. So what were some of your first impressions of Reggie as a young man? What were some of the team's perceptions of Reggie early on? What did you like about Reggie early on in the process?
Well, he jumped off the field early on. You know, we were watching Santana Moss because he was a big name, and you know, you have to do your homework. It's not, you can't say, well, we're drafting 24th or 5th or 6th and he won't get to us. You have to be ready. So, and he's also, if he's good enough, he's also a benchmark for everybody else at the position in the draft. Did you have the board ranked properly? So we were watching Santana Moss, Dom and I together, and we both said, you know, who's the other receiver?
Right.
That's Reggie Wayne. Holy Toledo. This is before we had numbers. And so we went to a Miami game, or I went myself. I can't remember whether we went together or separately. And separately, because Dom went to the school. Dom made the school visit, and I went to a game. And we both said, you know what? Reggie Wayne's the better player. And, yeah, you're right. And Dom being Dom said, don't say that too loud. and he was right. He was correct.
And what did you see? Can you compare the two for us in terms of skills and other, say, intangibles? You know, why Reggie? Well, obviously, again, our friends in the lovingly the DIC, the Draft Industrial Complex, weren't going that way. But you guys saw through that. What did you see?
Well, first of all, we didn't. I was talking to somebody earlier in the week who asked me, you know, why is it that you and the Patriots and certain other teams always kept things close to the vest and in essence were contrarian? And I said, because we did our own thing. We didn't listen to the outside stuff. We kept it closed up. We relied on our own people and our own people alone. We didn't care what some other team thought of a player or what some guru thought. We used the guru board only as a measuring stick to tell us where a player might fall in other people's eyes. So it was easy to go through our process because it was our process. And as Bill Belichick said when he talked about the cut process, you know, it would take me all day to explain it to you. He was right. It would. And what he didn't say was, and you still wouldn't agree with it. So, you know, we blocked it all out. And so we did our own thing. Now, both guys were fine from the intangible standpoint. No problem there. They were both really good guys and good workers. Reggie was bigger. He had better separation, even though Santana was a little bit quicker. Santana had the better numbers. Reggie had a real separation knack, a real knack for running routes. He was a polished route runner, even in college. He had that ability to control his body, and his hands were exquisite. I mean, they were really great. And we were big on hands. Again, I'm repeating things I've said before, but Tom Moore, our offensive coordinator, famously said when we were discussing a receiver who didn't have great hands, he said in his gravelly voice and gruff way, "We got the most accurate quarterback in the history of football. Why would we want a guy who can't catch?" So the bottom line is that Reggie checked all the boxes, and a little shy. We wanted 4.9 or below, so he's 2/100ths of a second slower than that, and looked a little bit. He looked slow on film. He played faster than he looked on film, but we were fine with it. There was from the day that we began, that Dom and I began to look at the film and compare the two, less than two games in, we both looked at each other and said, you know what, Reggie Wayne's the better player, at least for us. And Santana had a nice career. I mean, it wasn't a bad career.
Yeah.
But he's not a Hall of Famer, obviously.
No. So can you talk a little bit about like Reggie's work ethic? How did he prepare? Those kinds of things.
Well, he came in and had the benefit of Marvin already being there. He played, I think, 8 years beyond Marvin's retirement when he really was the number one receiver. And we'll talk about that relative to Hall eligibility or selection. But he had the benefit of seeing Marvin and Peyton, and he jumped in with both feet. So they became the three amigos. And worked constantly. And Reggie was smart enough to recognize that if he wanted to be a big producer, he was going to have to join that group anyway. But his normal inclination was to just work as hard as he possibly could work. And he did. And it's strange. People think of wide receivers as divas, right? It was hard to get a sentence out of Marvin. And if he didn't want you to find him, even though he was in the building, you couldn't find him.
Right.
He could, as someone said, he could disappear in plain sight,
Yeah.
Marvin was right here. You turn around. Where's Marvin?
Now, that's actually a good quality for a wide receiver too.
Yeah.
What is happening? We've got some exciting news. Our pod is partnering with PlayActionPools.com this season to bring some interactive fun to the sports we love most. You'll be able to get in on the action with our PlayActionPools.com Football Pick'em Challenge, which is open to everyone. Here's how it works. Sign up for our contest, Believe Football Pick'em. That's Believe, B-L-E-A-V, Football Pick'em at PlayActionPools.com. And then you get your picks in each week. You're going to select the 10 highest profile games of the week between NFL and college football. Whoever gets the most picks correct each week will win a pair of electric sunglasses and a pair of DC shoes. Again, go to PlayActionPools.com and sign up for the contest. Believe, B-L-E-A-V, Football Pick'em. And if you plan on hosting your own football contest, go to PlayActionPools today. They've got Survivor, Pick'em, as well as cool sports-style concepts called Build Your Bankroll. PlayActionPools.com, it's your new home for all your office sports pools. Check it out.
But in thinking through his training a little bit, I mean, it's eye-opening when you look at sort of games played and then injuries. I mean, he was relatively from like 2003 to 2011 about as healthy as you can be from a wide receiver. Definitely some injuries early on. Is there anything that changed for him in his physical preparation, or was
no? I think he just matured and learned how to take care of himself, which every young player has to do. But he was A plus work ethic, so he's going to do everything he had to do and more in the weight room. Everything he had to do and more in the way of nutrition, everything he had to do and more in terms of learning his position and working at his craft. So he was a Hall of Famer in every single respect. And then in addition to that, a great teammate.
So in terms of leadership, this is something that probably I'm curious about, and it's maybe a little bit outside of the context of obviously when you were there, but I mean, that season he had in 2012 after the tough season with Peyton, you guys are gone, and he has an unbelievable year. I mean, 106 catches, 1,355 yards, definitely from an outsider fan perspective, seemed like the leader of the team in a lot of ways. Can you talk a little bit about him as a leader, his leadership style, and kind of his influence on the team in that role?
Well, I've been told by people who were there that he embraced the mantle of leadership because he was, along with Anthony Costanzo, at the last link to the Peyton, Marvin, Edgerrin, you know, group, Dallas, et cetera. And so it was his job to carry the tradition forward. Interestingly, they immediately transitioned from the offense that we had run to a power type offense, play action offense. And T.Y. was there, but a raw rookie and a little guy. So Reggie was the whole show. But again, when young players like T.Y. come in, when young players like Kelly come in, they're looking to the veterans who they watched on television playing with Peyton and playing with Marvin and playing with Edgerrin. So this is the living link to that group. And so Reggie embraced that and said, I'm gonna show these guys what it takes to be a champion. And he did, and had a phenomenal year. Now, he was the only receiver. T.Y., as I said, was not ready yet to step in and be the player that he is now. But, you know, Reggie was the man, and he stepped up and did it.
You know, but it says a lot about him, you know, from a character standpoint, from an intellect standpoint, you know, that he made this perception that he was the connection to that previous era of glory. I mean, that's not everybody would have done that. You could have easily just, you know, skirted by, and he would have gotten a lot of targets. But, you know, it goes back to the guy you drafted, and it says a lot about him that he, you know, that he stepped up in that way to me.
Yeah, I Reggie never got the acclaim that he deserved, just because Marvin was so spectacular. But Peyton trusted him implicitly, and interestingly enough, in Super Bowl 41, it's Reggie who breaks the game open, you know, with the first touchdown, turns the tide, and had a big night, as did Dominic Rhodes. But I think that when Reggie took a look at Andrew, he said, okay, I'm going to play some more. I'm going to play longer than the next couple of years. And I'm going to play with a guy who has a chance to be as good as number 18. So let me get with this guy and teach him what I know about the passing game and what I know about what we did in the context of a brand new offense, which didn't protect him as well, unfortunately, and didn't really made a lot of bad personnel judgments on the offensive line and so forth. But he took Andrew under his wing, if you will, and said, okay, here, I'm your guy. Let's go. And that helped Andrew greatly.
Right. So this is something I've always wanted to know about a guy like Reggie, is what type of guy was he? Was he, because obviously not a guy that was – totally in the limelight, not a ton of notoriety. And I say this in the context of this. So when I was doing statistical analysis this week and prepping for the show, if you look at his core 8-year career, kind of from like 04 to like 11, right? So you just kind of run it 04 to 11. His stats are shockingly comparable to Megatron's, but he also has unbelievable season. He had an unbelievable season in 12 that Johnson didn't have, that if, and he did this, a lot of it, playing with Marvin Harrison. So had he been more of a self-promoter type of play, I think the argument for him is, just from a stupid fan perspective, is far more compelling than Calvin's.
I think you're right. The voters held against him. Some voters held against him that he played with Marvin. They took the position that, well, he got single coverage all the time because Marvin got the double coverage. Now, that's, first of all, it's both wrong and sophomoric. If you know anything about coverage, that's not necessarily all the case. But, you know, the voters are different cats. They look at the game differently than football people do. That point of view, I think, was blunted pretty well by Tony, who made the point that what Reggie earned, he earned on his own. It had nothing to, you know, Marvin was on the other side, but you don't put the kind of numbers Reggie put up without, you know, being a great receiver, number one. And number two, for 8 years of his career, Marvin wasn't there. He was the man. And the 12 year, there was nobody there, really.
Right.
So T.Y. was a raw rookie. So I think that argument was dismissed. Someone else made an argument that in one game in the playoffs, Revis shut him down. I don't know that to be true because I haven't looked at the film. I will later on this fall. But then I went and looked up the playoff statistics, and that one game is clearly an anomaly because he ranks way up there in all the statistics in the playoffs. Interestingly, I think what you're getting at is what kind of a personality was he? If you're not a Yankee fan, well, even if you are, if you're a Yankee hater during the Yankees' modern Jeter, Joe Torre heyday,
right?
Reggie was Andy Pettit.
Okay.
Mr. Clutch.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So
he's there every day. Hey, Reg, how you doing? Good. Bill, how are you? Anything you need? No.
Right.
Reggie's got a charity banquet this week. Sunday night after a game, everybody's going.
Yeah.
Because they have respect for him, not because they think they need to, because he's one of the most respected and popular guys on the team. When his brother unfortunately passed away, there was no question but Mr. Irsay was gonna, you know, made the plane available, and everybody, including even the head coach, went to the funeral, even though it was in season. He was one of the most respected people in the building by everybody, and everybody liked him.
You know, speaking of you going back to film, the film to watch that one Revis game, when those media guys say, "Oh, he was got the single coverage," I can guarantee you they have not watched film to justify that. That's just the myth that's propagated, and they just buy into it.
Yeah, there, and frankly, there's a lot of myth that flies around that room. There is.
Because Reggie Wayne seems to me to be the ultimate example in a blind test. If you take the name off the statistics and everything else away and you just look at it, there's no reason he shouldn't have gotten in this year in my mind.
That's correct. The reason he didn't was because Torrey Holt split some of the vote. And there were some people, who feel like, you know, somebody wrote, not a voter, somebody who sent an email to all of the selectors, a fan, I guess, said, I'm paraphrasing now, enough of these number two receivers. They don't belong in the Hall of Fame. Well, excuse me, for 8 years of his career, which is the same amount of time that Megatron played, Reggie was the number one receiver. Marvin wasn't there. Torrey Holt and Henry and Isaac Bruce were together. So if you want to make that argument for Torrey Holt, it's probably legitimate. It's not for Reggie Wayne. But that's out there in the ether. That's out there in the ether. So it was a, you know, a harder test than I thought it should have been. But it's on me and others to, you know, to come up with the information to make that work, you know, to tell the real story.
And look, Marvin was Marvin. There's no question about it. But it's also unfair because if Reggie was there as a threat on the other side, that also made things easier for Marvin. I mean, it's reciprocal. You can't just have it be one way. That's ridiculous. It's like saying Yogi Berra can't be in the Hall of Fame because he played with Mickey Mantle.
Well, that's exactly right. In response to the person who said that Rivas shut him out in this one particular game, playoff game, I said, well, you know, Bob Feller struck out Mickey Mantle a few times. I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But I mean, if you look at the collective and individual playoff stats, he opened up the Super Bowl for you guys, was dominant in that playoff run. And if right. you look at the career playoff statistics, it's 93 receptions, 1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns. It's, by all accounts, it's an amazing season for an individual player who has arguably some of the greatest stats to ever play. It's just, this one for me, it's just dumb.
Well, you know, it's up to myself and others to make that argument. Just to put the playoff statistics in context, Reggie has 93 playoff receptions, third of all time.
Yeah.
1,254 receiving yards, sixth all time. 9 TDs, ninth all time. And 67 first down receptions in the playoffs, fifth of all time. Now, the first down receptions are an interesting statistic, because when Marvin got double coverage and we needed 7, 8 yards, sometimes 9 yards for a first down and had to throw the ball far more often than not was going to Reggie. Number one, because he could get open. And number two, because he was always going to catch the ball. And number three, because he knew exactly what route to run to get the first down. Mr. Clutch, that's what Andy Pettit, hand him the ball every 4 days. You know what's going to happen.
Yep.
Mr. Reliable.
It just seems like every generation we do this. To me, this is like Art Monk revisited, right? Maybe a little bit.
Yeah,
that's right. What are we talking about? He's the most catches ever to play in the league, and we're not going to put him in the Hall of Fame. Like, what?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So I think we've established this is a Hall of Famer, but when does he get in? Do you think he gets in this year?
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, if you draw a comparison between he and Holt, and I went right back and did this, there is no comparison. But you can make an argument for Smith, and you can make an argument for Anquan Boldin, and you can make an argument for Andre Johnson. But if you look at Reggie compared to all those guys, well, let's just take it compared to Holt, who had a shorter career, 11 years versus 14 for Reggie. But still, you know, that's enough. I don't think that makes a heck of a lot of difference. Reggie has 14,345 yards, 10th of all time. He's the only person who's not in the Hall of Fame in the top 10. So you could stop right there and say, okay.
Done.
He has 1,070 receptions, 10th of all time. He's the only guy in the top 10 who isn't in.
Right.
Right? 82 TDs, 25th of all time. His average per catch was 13.4 yards per catch, we know that the magic number is 12.
Yeah.
So he's anybody who's more than 12 yards a catch is having a significant input on the game. He's averaging a chunk play every time he touches the ball. Torrey Holt, on the other hand, 1,382 yards. So he's below the Reggie by a significant number. His supporters argued that's the difference between 11 years and whatever, 14. So, okay. He's 16th of all time. So there are people in front of him. 920 receptions, 21st of all time, not 10th. There's a huge difference there that isn't accounted for by longevity. And someone during the discussions mentioned, well, you know, he had to be the target because everybody doubled Bruce. And I said, well, who was playing next to Reggie for those years? You argue that Reggie shouldn't get in because he played next to Marvin. Why should this guy get in when he played more years next to Isaac Bruce?
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, and Isaac Bruce, by the way, absolutely a Hall of Famer, no question. So, and then 74 TDs, 38th of all time versus 82 for Reggie. So he's clearly better in every statistical measurement, which you use for wide receivers because it's so obvious. Both played with good quarterbacks, Hall of Fame quarterbacks, by the way. Both played in up-tempo, pass-centric offenses. So it's a really – you can make a good comparison there. And both played in two Super Bowls and winning one. So there you go. I mean, on its face – there's no argument. Now, when you put, I didn't do Torrey Holt's playoff statistics. I have to do that. That'll be part of my presentation, obviously. But if you add Steve Smith under this very same criteria, 15 years, a year longer than Reggie, 14,731 receiving yards, eighth of all time. So ahead of Reggie there slightly, 1,031 catches, 12th of all time, 14.2 average, which is, you know, 0.8 ahead. So they're very comparable. TDs 81, very comparable, 28th of all time, and 9 playoff TDs, the same as Reggie. So this is an even more a closer comparison between then Torrey Holt kind of fades from the picture when you look at Steve Smith.
Yeah, Steve Smith. Yep.
Now the thing Steve Smith didn't do, I don't know how many Super Bowls and I don't know what his playoff statistics were. So that may be the determining factor. I've yet to do that.
Well, and Steve Smith had that in the Super Bowl run in the Jake Delhomme year, had that sort of jump off the screen few playoff games that maybe Reggie didn't have, just in terms of fan memory, but just blindly looking at the stats, the Reggie thing seems just not comparable.
Yeah, and Steve Smith was a bit more spectacular than Reggie.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't count.
Right.
It did for Megatron, by the way.
Yeah.
But it really shouldn't count.
And a bigger media guy and more outgoing and bombastic and everything like that.
Yeah.
You know, which the press buys into that stuff.
And anybody who can make Michael Irvin stop talking on television just out of sheer fear is certainly a pretty good TV guy.
Oh, listen, no one here is going to make the case against Steve Smith.
No, but I think they both have to get – the good news is this year, this seems like – in some ways, this could be a little bit of a right the wrong year. Steve Smith's probably the only real first-time ballot guy that gets in, and then we can right a couple wrongs with some guys that should get in.
Well, you know, if you can look at it a number of different ways. You can say Steve Smith and Reggie Wayne are identical. They're both deserving. Put them in. Steve. Now there'll be people who say Steve Smith's not a first ballot guy. The only first ballot guys should be Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and people like that. That's kind of old school, grouchy old guy thinking. But I wouldn't argue with that. But Steve Smith's better than Torrey Holt. I mean, that's the bottom line. Simple as that. And Reggie Wayne's slightly better than both. Way better than Torrey Holt statistically, but, you know, slightly better than Steve Smith. And a different guy. Not that that's, I mean, that shouldn't count for anything, really.
Exactly.
Steve's personality, totally different than Reggie's, but so what?
Right. But their personalities, along with their talents, got them to where they were. But, you know, we can do it more than one way.
Yeah. Well, don't ever confuse personality with character.
Exactly.
And then, you know, Bolden is considerably below both of those guys in the stats, except for TDs. He has 82. He was a very good red zone guy because he couldn't run, but he was big and strong. But he's only 12.8 yards per reception. And Andre Johnson is he's a consideration. He's more than 14,000 yards, but only 70 TDs, 46th on the TD list, and 13.3. So he's comparable to Reggie, but, you know, you got to take into account Colts versus Houston Texans. And the victory ledger is lopsided.
Right. Now, this definitely seems like this could be the year where we get a couple of these guys in, a little bit of a cleanup year, and hopefully all goes right with the world. Well, Bill, no pressure. You got to make the case, not just our fans, but the real case. But, hey, we've got some fun audibles that as we
– Wait a minute. I just want to say I got a campaign slogan for Reggie from Spike Lee. Guys, do the right thing.
There you go.
There you go. All right, here we go. Couple audibles wrapping up the show today. So our first audible comes from Gabriel. He's at Eden Barrios on Twitter. He said, Bill says, you never are one player away. My question is, the Washington football team seems to be a quarterback away from challenging, at least be competitive in the next 2 to 3 years. Are they one player away?
No, because football is a game that is so team-oriented and so specialized within the context of the team that even though the quarterback is the driving force of the offense, even if you have a great quarterback and the other parts of your team are not functioning, witness New England 2 years ago in Brady's last year there, and witness Tampa Bay this past year when they win the Super Bowl, where Brady plays an outsized public role and an outsized leadership role, but isn't the defining force. He's not the deciding force in the biggest game. It's the defense. Even if you have that guy, you still need other guys. And because of free agency, everything turns over every year. You're turning 40% of your team over. So my answer would be there are a lot of things that have to go right in order for the Washington football team to go all the way or go deep in the playoffs. And quarterback is clearly the most important one, but not the only one.
Well, I'm going to say we're not one player away because we're going to do it this year. little tease for next week's preview.
All right. So our other audible, and because he includes the accent over to his the I in his first name, I'm going to give this the French pronunciation. This comes from Coach Benoit Drouin. And Coach Benoit says, question. Why isn't Roger Craig in the Hall of Fame? ? Yes, he may not have hit the quote unquote thresholds as far as rushing yards, but he revolutionized the running back position by being a threat as a pass catcher and teams had to game plan around that. Appreciate your comments, Bill.
Well, he doesn't hit the metrics as a ball carrier. That's correct. He was a very, very instrumental player, because what Bill did was to take the short pass, the check down, if you will, and scheme it in different ways to turn it into what amounted to a 5-yard running play with the pass. And Roger Craig was very instrumental in doing that. But it's tough to look at him in the context of other people, other halfbacks or running backs, because when you're talking about rushing yards,
he had 8,100 rushing yards. So here, Bill, I can give you the stat line.
He's
so
way, I got it right here. He's okay. Way down the line. He's way down the line. Go ahead. You fire it up.
All right, so here we go. So his career stats, he played in 165 games. He had 8,100 rushing yards on 1,900 attempts for a 4.1 average. He had 56 rushing touchdowns. I think what the coach is getting at here is the receiving yards. So he had 566 receptions for 4,911 receiving yards, averaged 8.7 yards a catch, and had 17 touchdowns as a receiver. So his total touchdowns were 73. His total scrimmage yards were 13,100.
If you look at it that way, he has a good case. But you know, the voters, I don't think, look at it necessarily that way. They view the receiving yards as kind of schemed yards, if you will. And if you look at him, he doesn't measure up solely as a receiver and doesn't measure up solely as a running back. And it's hard for people to meld the two. And he's now in a position where, you know, his contributions and his team are a distant memory, and maybe not even a distant memory for a lot of the voters. So, it's a hard case. It's a hard case. And people like Fred Taylor, who may not make it, are presumed to have a better case because their rushing yards are better. So he's a little bit in no man's land, very, you know, deserving when you look at it all.
Oh, yeah.
But terrific. But a bit in no man's land.
Yeah, I mean, terrific football player, huge contribution to the success of his team.
And a beast in 1988. I mean, his 88 season with 1,500 rushing yards, 386 receiving yards. So that was a big boy year.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, as always, that is our show for this week. If you have questions you want us to cover in the Audible, hit us up on Twitter at IF Bill Polian. I got to say, I did our fantasy draft and Dynasty Owner this week. I got to thank Tim and the guys. It was super fun. Great platform. If you're looking for a fantasy league, check them out. It is truly a lot of fun. I use a lot of Bill's recommendations and whispers in my ear through the podcast to put the team together. So,
and you speed under the cap.
I did. We were the lowest under the cap for a long time, and then I got a little crazy at the end. All right, guys. Well, thank you. Let me know if there's anything you want us to cover in the Audible, and we'll be sure to hit it. Have a good week, guys.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Have fun. Stay safe, everybody.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.